The University of Detroit Mercy presents Ask the Professor. Today, we're happy to have the professors back in the studio again for another brand new show. And we'll soon have a brand new autographed photograph of the panel available to those who stump the professors. So send your questions today to atp@udmercy.edu. Now, here's our host, Matt Mayo.
And let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the world of retirement, it's Professor Diane Manica.
Hi, Matt.
How are you doing?
Great. It's a wonderful world of retirement.
We were speaking, listeners, about possibly changing the time that we meet on a weekly basis, and Diane chimes in with, anytime's good for me.
Absolutely.
It's wonderful.
Yep, it is wonderful. It's nice to be able to set your own schedule to do what you want to do when you want to do it with whom you wish to do it.
You have earned it. That's all I've got
to say. Thank you very much. I think so.
The president has said so.
Yes,
it's true.
Oh my God,
all
that
the way
was amazing.
From the top.
Yep.
Continuing around the table, we sort of have a small panel today, but that's okay. It's Professor Dan Maggio wearing his very cool polo from the FIRST organization. FIRST Lego League International. Oh, it was in Canada. Where was it?
Toronto, Matt.
Toronto.
Alan Allen.
I can't do the voice. No one can. I think Michael could do it.
We said we were going to work it in somehow, folks. We were having a reminiscing about old Detroit DJs. If you want to send us questions regarding Alan Allen, that would be great because we just had quite a chuckle finding him online or his recordings online. But how are you doing, Dan?
I'm great, actually.
Are you relatively dry?
I am. No basement.
Oh, well, that helps.
I know.
For our listeners, you ought to share, we had a huge flood if you didn't watch the national news.
Not good these last couple days in the Metro Detroit area, including the obvious civil engineering that you might want to shore up the soil on the side of major freeways so it doesn't just wash away in a rainstorm.
Oh, boy.
Well,
holy
that was
smokes.
Unexpected.
Well, sure, but usually they plant trees and bushes to hold on to that soil.
That's true.
So, I don't know.
Well, they probably got cut down for scrap.
Yeah, exactly. But that was a chunk of 75, so it's going to be a while before we get to anything normal around
here,
right?
They said structural damage.
So, anyway.
Enjoy.
Now, Professor Dave Chow, College for Creative Studies. How are you?
It's dry, relatively, here in this basement.
Have you tried to take the Woodward Underpass since Tuesday?
Free and clear.
Is it open?
Free and clear.
That's like the demon down there.
That's the deepest place in Metro Detroit as far as I'm concerned.
The only thing is there's one car that stalled down there.
There is.
Oh, jeez.
And every time you drive down there, I don't know if you do what I do, but you look for the cop that occasionally hides under there.
Yeah they do.
It's true. Occasionally.
Okay, more than once.
Yeah. Pretty much every day.
With their little gun.
Yeah. So anyway, I drive by and I take a look. Oh, it's just a stalled car.
He got me to slow down.
Yeah. Oh, doggone it.
Maybe they put it there on purpose. Folks, this is a program where you could send us questions regarding anything. I personally would appreciate anything about Detroit radio history. And, of course, our producer and technical assistant, Michael Jason, would appreciate that, too. If you stump the panel, you can win one of our prizes. And if you don't stump the panel, you can win one of our prizes, too. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways, but at this point, they're pretty much all the Internet. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You can tweet at us using @AskTheProfUDM or the hashtag AskTheProfUDM on Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook. So please do one of those things right now as we get into our new set of questions, which is not actually a new set of questions. We had a set of questions sent to us by the wonderful Kimberly Richards, and we had just gotten into them back in June. We're going to get back to them now, and they are of the hodgepodge variety, which we all
excellent
truly adore. For instance, in bowling slang, what is a puddle, or sometimes also referred to as a poodle?
The Lodge Freeway.
Yeah, not my basement.
A double gutter?
It's a gutter ball in general. Oh, but yeah, very good. Very good.
Damn.
Where's Kim from?
I forget where Kimberly
is. Because I'll be playing, playing the role.
Somewhere in California. Yep.
Somewhere in California where it's warm.
Don't want to give too much away because it'll be putting stars in everybody's eyes, but we're hoping to have Kimberly be our very first calling in show sometime this fall.
Gasp.
So that should be very, very cool. To meet people face to face, but not really.
Yeah, sort of.
Ear to ear.
Ear to ear.
Ben Nye, California.
Ben Nye, thank you.
The voice of God.
I'll bring
when
a
I don't have it
in,
right in front of me, I don't know anything. What country was the first in the world to impose a special tax for fatty foods in 2011?
England.
It wasn't England. Relatively close by, speaking of Europe.
France?
Was it France?
Norway?
Denmark. It was Denmark, yes. Ah. Yes. Taxes on all foods containing more than 2% saturated fat. So that's a big deal.
I was going to say, that's a lot of food.
I sure was that... just there on a cruise, and so I know they tax.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm wondering, New York City tends to be the thing that follows up things like that,
yeah,
right?
Soda pop and all that
giant
stuff.
Beverages rule over there. Who invented the first heart-shaped Valentine's Day candy box circa 1861?
Sanders.
It wasn't Brock. Sanders. That was a great possibility.
Who's that other one?
He had opened a tea and coffee shop in Birmingham, England in 1822 and soon expanded into chocolates.
What, like Sidney Boggs? No, that's local, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who else?
Yeah, it is. It's a very famous name.
Earl Grey.
Chocolate.
British chocolate.
That's tea, isn't it?
He could have gone in and become a chocolatier.
Oh, British chocolate.
And British chocolate. I don't really associate chocolate.
Like a Werther, a Godiva.
I could give it away by saying they make cream eggs.
Cadbury.
Cadbury.
Yes.
Okay.
The very first world's first heart-shaped candy box, specifically for Valentine's.
Honestly, I thought Cadbury was Canadian.
Oh. No, it's British.
They're British.
British.
Okay.
They just ship it over to us. We just like them.
What famous organized crime figure, now deceased, owned a bolt named Not Guilty? Oh, my. I've never heard this before.
Like OJ?
It was.
Oh, wait.
Organized.
Oh, organized. Oh,
not disorganized.
Not Al Capone.
It was not Al Capone. This person died in prison in 2002.
Don Gotti?
Yeah, it was Don Gotti. John Gotti was his name. They called him the Teflon Don because nothing ever stuck.
That's what it was.
Yes. Guilty.
Yes. The model for the Batman's Carmine Falcone character.
Excellent.
After all was said and done. Facebook membership was initially restricted to what institution in the United States?
Was it Harvard,
America?
Wasn't it?
Harvard, yes, absolutely. And for the record, it was soon expanded to other colleges in the Boston area, then the Ivy League, then just Stanford, and then everybody else. So they really kept it close to the vest for a while, if you think about it.
And now everyone.
Now everybody.
Well, and then everyone started to drop it off, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's okay.
So cuttlefish, jellyfish, delicious, and starfish have one big thing in common.
Fish.
Yeah. Fish?
How about the opposite?
Oh.
They're not fish.
Oh, they're
none
not
of them are fish. Yeah. None of them are fish. They're invertebrates. They have no backbones, gills, or fins. The cuttlefish is related to the octopus and squid, jellyfish to coral, and sea anemone and starfish, sea urchin, and sand dollar, none of which on this list are fish. So
well, we're talking about the word, right, Dan?
I was just talking about the fact that they had the word fish in it.
That's pretty good. Well, you were close.
I was.
For what alleged minor offense was Martin Luther King Jr. arrested and jailed in January 1956 while leading the Montgomery, Alabama bus boycott? Minor offense.
Jaywalking?
I mean, you're in the right zone. It wasn't jaywalking.
Spitting, chewing bubble gum.
Keep going minor. It involved an automobile.
Speeding?
Speeding by how many miles per hour?
One.
Five.
Two.
Oh. Yeah, he was driving 30 in a 25.
Wow.
Yes. 4 days after his arrest, which for the record was his first ever, that's kind of an interesting piece of trivia, King's house was bombed. The bus boycott was organized to protest segregation on the city's buses. 30 and a 25. Oh my gosh, what's the world
I've
to?
Done better than that. Oh.
Oops.
Oops.
Don't do it by my house. What early American invented an odometer to measure distances along the Boston Post Road?
Paul Revere?
Of those contemporaries, it wasn't Revere.
Ben Franklin?
Yeah, it was. In
Ben
his capacity
Franklin
as the
everything.
Deputy postmaster.
Yeah.
You know? Isn't that amazing?
Wise guy.
His mechanical odometer measured distances by counting the rotations of a wheel on the carriage. He spent 10 weeks traveling along the Boston Post Road, which linked Manhattan to Boston, marking each mile with a wooden stake.
Oh, my.
A crew following him replaced the stakes with engraved mile-marking stones.
So is that where we get the mile markers from the freeways?
In New England, that was a big deal to them. They needed to know. You know, you can imagine being in your little carriage and How many more miles to Boston, Bob?
Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
No. Forsooth.
I gotta go to the bathroom.
Okay, now this is interesting. I'll give a little bit of background on this to do a good setup. I think that folks know that the bubbles in champagne is carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. Okay? So
yep.
Same thing that's okay. In pop. But think about this. If the glass was perfectly smooth on the inside and there was nothing else in the champagne, the bubbles shouldn't be able to form. So the question is, what actually makes it fizz?
Exposure to oxygen?
Not exposure to oxygen.
Release
of pressure? Think of it this way. If I had a champagne glass and I pour the champagne, usually you have a minimum amount of bubbling after you open it, you know, after it settles down. But you pour it in and immediately it starts
gets agitated.
It gets agitated by something. What could possibly be agitating it?
Well, air?
Not air, though.
Hydrogen or some chemical reaction?
No, it is not. No. That's what we're trying to get at here.
It's got to do with friction?
Friction with items.
Molecular friction?
Mm-mm. Basically, if it wasn't for the dust and the inevitable dish towel fibers that could be found inside every glass,
really?
It would never fizz. If you had a perfectly clean glass and poured it would just fill up like a liquid and nothing would happen.
I just pour it right out of the brown paper bag. I never noticed.
It's like, I've never noticed because I pour it directly into my gullet.
Yeah, you never went in a glass.
Funnel.
Think of it from the Mentos perspective. Yeah. You know, the Mentos dissolving is what got the gas to come out of the pop. So if you just drop a rock into pop, nothing happens because it's not really disturbing it in any way.
I don't want to do that, though.
Yeah. Crazy. The people in France, it says here, at the University of Reims, found that if a glass was totally smooth and debris-free, the molecules in champagne, the CO2 molecules, would not bubble. So, very sad. Why were there no U.S. competitors in 1912 when swimming events for women were first introduced to the Olympics?
Clothing? Some article of clothing?
It's definitely clothing-based. Sadly, it has specifically to do with the United States.
What, the U.S. were into bikinis or something a little bit more revealing than the global standards?
No, actually, it's the other way
around. Oh.
It says that the U.S. had Olympic rules about not permitting women to compete unless they could wear a skirt at the time, which I'm
a little
leaving
bit of a drag.
Would slow you down a little
if you
bit
swam
in the pool.
I think so.
That wool skirt just doesn't help.
You know what it reminds me of? The most fascinating thing I learned after the last Olympics is how we had competitors from Middle Eastern countries for the first time in a very long time, and how this company saw a niche and decided to invent the women's full cover bodysuit so they could swim and still stay in tune with their cultural standards.
But then did you hear about the men? They wouldn't allow the bodysuits because they actually made them slippier than flesh.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, I do remember.
So they would have gone faster.
Yeah, they would have gone faster. So they wouldn't let men go full bodysuit.
Very interesting. Relatively speaking, hint, hint, relatively speaking, what connection does Napoleon Bonaparte have to the FBI of the United States of America?
They're all short.
J. Edgar Hoover?
Nope.
He's related to the founder?
Yeah, his grandnephew, Charles Bonaparte, founded the government agency that eventually became the FBI.
Impressive.
Yep. I was a guess.
He was in Teddy Roosevelt's cabinet. And created a special unit of agents in the Justice Department named the Bureau of Investigation, which in 1935 was renamed the FBI. So, kind of weird the way that works out. Oh, joy. Oh. Which four U.S. presidents have been inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame?
Jerry Ford, I think.
No. Ronald Reagan? Not on the list. Oh, you guys are going to have to think about that one while we take a break. We are back with some great questions from Kimberly Richards, and we are just going hog wild with which four U.S. presidents have been inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. How about I attempt to sort of tease you through this one, okay? Arguably, the two most famous American presidents of all time were
Abraham Lincoln and George Washington.
Washington and Lincoln were inducted in 1992.
No kidding.
To the National
Wrestling.
1992.
It took them
a while.
So 20, yeah, they weren't even around to enjoy it.
Now, think literally of a rough and tumble president who you might expect would be in the National
Wrestling. Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy Roosevelt, absolutely. In 1993.
Oh, great.
Year after.
Nice to know he was early.
And as far further on to 1997, I believe this president has a dubious honor of being one of our largest.
Taft. Oh, okay.
The four who wrestled for these for this sport were honored as outstanding Americans who, quote, used the discipline of sport to launch notable careers in other walks of life.
Wow.
I was waiting here like Captain Lou Albano or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly. And Andre Hulk Hogan. Giant? Yeah. It's like William Howard Taft and the Iron Sheik. You know, that's crazy. What were car owners required to put on their homemade license plates when New York became the first state to mandate them in 1901?
Lights?
Not
bells,
lights.
Whistles?
No. Think their symbols.
Their homemade license? A New York symbol?
No. A way that they could their car could be identified as belonging to them?
Their initials?
Yeah, their initials. Yeah. Isn't that wild? Hmm. They did it by affixing their initials to a leather pad or metal plate.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. I remember leather license plates. That's like
up in
the
Lansing,
oldest.
You do American remember Pickers. Them?
Yeah, that's right. Because it was in
the Oldsmobile.
Yep, the Olds Museum.
Leather
yep.
license plates. I don't remember those.
Never heard of them.
Yep. Yeah, they had leather license plates.
There are people who are, I'd put it in the same category as like philatelists and numismatists. You know, collecting stamps, coins. They collect license plates, and the leather ones are the hardest to come by. The original name of the comic strip we knew as Peanuts was...
Little Folks.
Little Folks. In 1947, Charles Schulz drew it for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Hmm. It was a flop, never achieving permanent spot in the paper. In 1950, he compiled his strips, sold the series to the United Features Syndicate, which changed the name to Peanuts. Schulz originally resisted the name change, telling Time in 1965, "I wanted a strip with dignity and significance." Peanuts made it sound too insignificant, and the number one pet peeve of Charles Schulz, if I remember this correctly, was for about 10 years, everybody called Charlie Brown Peanuts because they just assumed the name of the strip had to be the name of the character, so it's kind of funny. What English novelist wrote of a heroine's interest in baseball 41 years before Abner Doubleday's offsided invention of the game?
What English novelist
wrote of a heroine's interest in baseball 41 years before?
Where's Beth when we need her? This sounds like a Beth question.
She would probably get this one. Yep.
Oh, boy.
No, I'm not good with authors.
English authors.
Well, there was a specific
Chaucer
English author of that time period, so 41 years before the late 1800s, who would have written a lot about heroines in particular.
1850, it'd be like... Jane Austen?
Jane Austen. Very well done. Yes. In Northanger Abbey, one of my wife's favorite stories, she noted her tomboy heroine, Catherine, preferred, quote, cricket, baseball, riding on horseback, and running about the country to the age of 14.
Did she refer to it as baseball in the novel?
She did, and baseball had just begun to catch on as the term used for the British game of...
Cricket.
Rounders is what they called it.
Oh.
Cricket is about running back and forth.
Yeah.
And rounders was about running
going around
the bases. So, yep. Pretty interesting.
But could Abner Doubleday have invented baseball?
I think a lot of people
used 50 years he didn't really invent.
Don't believe that he invented it. He just popularized it.
Yeah.
is the
myth
put it, you know.
I mean, if you use a term 50 years ahead of time,
it's not.
He was an advertising executive.
Well, he's a PR guy. He's a mouthpiece.
Yeah. I remember reading something that said something to the point of, even though you could do this right now if you really wanted to, find a way to popularize and professionalize hide and seek. It certainly is a game that everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically the equivalent. I mean,
I'm
a stick
pro.
And a rock,
yep.
And you turned it into something where people get paid hundreds of millions of dollars. That's a pretty big deal.
Well, speaking of which, have you guys seen cricket being played down at Belle Isle now?
I heard that the cricket pitch
is
up.
Yeah,
yes.
It's down there. I was down there 2 weeks ago. It's wonderful.
Maybe I'll go down and try to figure out
how does Belle Isle
look. It looks gorgeous.
Good.
And actually, if you guys go within the next 2 weeks, because on late, you know, I think Labor Day weekend is the last weekend they have the slide open.
Mm-hmm.
They reopen the giant slide.
That's right.
Nice.
Love the giant slide. And
do you remember when they had horse and carriages over there?
Yes. I used to play softball down there. Oh, trying to get to the game on time and having to follow a horse and carriage. Out of my way!
I love them. I love them. They were little Shetland ponies and pulled a little cart.
Oh, never.
Go on
you
back
never
then.
Did. Ah.
What was unique about Harry Winston, owner of the famous Hope Diamond, when he willed it to the Smithsonian Institute, he gave it to the Smithsonian Institute in 1958. What was so unique about that? It was his to give. It was.
Wasn't it supposedly cursed?
I believe the Hope Diamond is supposed to be cursed, yeah.
Mm.
It's called the Hope Diamond, for the record, not because of a person's name, but that he hoped it would help the United States establish a gem collection. That's kind of goofy. He mailed it to them for $145.29.
That's trust.
He wrapped it in brown paper and insured it for $145.
Oh, my. Do you have anything to declare? Nope. Oh, perishable? Heart. Nope.
Nope. Oh, that's just a giant chunk of glass. Give it to me.
Don't worry about it.
It's not worth $25 million or anything. How many active battleships are there in the year 2014 in the U.S. Navy?
56.
That's a little high.
I would say 25.
Keep going down.
10?
Wow. What?
Less than 10.
What? Less than 10?
Come on, I had that in my...
Well, maybe how they're defining battleship is... I just define that as any ship that can go into battle.
Not what a battleship is.
Technically, the Arizona
battleship is a very kind. Yeah. It's a very special kind. Very kind.
Two.
Very kind.
Then there's two.
There are exactly zero. The last one was the USS Missouri, which was decommissioned in 1992 and is now a memorial museum at Pearl Harbor. Cruisers and destroyers have replaced battleships.
I'm probably confusing the two.
Okay, but then what about like the Arizona that sunk in?
Well, yeah, but I would not call that an active battleship.
It wasn't decommissioned, was it, technically?
It was not decommissioned.
I believe they call that lost in battle.
Okay.
And even the word battle is up for grabs when it comes to Pearl Harbor, unfortunately. So
it's still manned.
My. What U.S. state was mentioned in the titles of three number one song hits of the 1960s and 70s?
States mentioned?
A specific state.
California.
Oklahoma?
Not California, not Oklahoma.
Alabama.
Not Alabama.
Sweet Alabama.
Mm-mm. Ray Charles, 1960.
Georgia.
Ah, Georgia on my mind. The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia. Vicki Lawrence, 1973.
Yep.
And Gladys Knight and the Pips?
Yep.
Oh,
Midnight Train to Georgia.
That's a great song.
Two other songs with Georgia in their titles charted high but didn't reach the top slot. Rainy Night in Georgia, Brooke Benton, 1970, and...
Johnny Mattress?
Sorry.
No. I just assumed you guys... I can't believe we talked about Georgia and you guys didn't go to The Devil Went Down to Georgia by Charlie Daniels Band.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
1979. What is the best-selling beer in the world by volume?
Budweiser.
16.5 billion pints last year. This sales figure is double that of Bud Light, which was the world's best-selling beer in 2008.
Guinness?
So is this Guinness? Is this a Heineken? English beer? German?
It is a Chinese beer.
Tsingtao.
It's not Tsingtao.
What?
That's not what it says here.
I don't know any Chinese.
Well, I... Dave.
Don't look at me. I don't drink.
Solid precipitation.
Rain? What? Ice.
It's called snow beer, is what it's
snow
called.
Snow beer?
Never heard of it.
Snow
Never
beer, heard. Like snow beer I know. Snow.
I remember pretty bad, actually.
That was bad. Oh.
Sorry, everyone.
That's okay.
We're not getting their endorsement, are we?
What percent of the 3,000 plant species with known anti-cancer properties are only found in the rainforest?
All of them.
Yeah.
Very close to all of them. I'll give it to you because it's 70%. That's a massive number. No, that's a massive number.
I'll take it, but...
Of all plants? Come on. That's crazy.
All of them.
Don't deplete the rainforests.
Please.
Stop. Right now. How do you know if you're sitting a mile above sea level when you attend a Colorado Rockies baseball game at Coors Field in Denver?
Measure it.
It is measured in a very specific way.
Is there a certain row in the stadium, like row 5 or 1?
I'm giving it to you. Purple seats in the 20th row of the stadium's upper deck mark 5,280 feet
above
sea level. Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Nice.
The Rockies.
One of these days.
I think we've had this one before. Maybe you guys already know it. Which media personality was once a speechwriter for Richard Nixon?
Ben Stein.
Yeah, conservative media personality.
Right.
Attained early success as speechwriter for American presidents Nixon and Ford. He later entered the entertainment field, became an actor, comedian, and Emmy Award-winning game show host for Win Ben Stein's Money.
Love that show.
Yep, that was a really, really great. And, of course, everybody knows him for Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes. And these, AccuView commercials? Or no, what's the eye drop commercials?
Oh, Clear Eyes.
Clear Eyes, thank you.
That's right. What tiny Caribbean island has an Irish harp on its flag? A shamrock-shaped passport stamp, and St. Patrick's Day is its official national holiday.
The Caribbean?
Caribbean.
Yeah, where's Jim Tubbs when we need him?
Yeah, come on. He would know that. Vacationing on the coast of Maine.
I don't want to hear it. He's probably slathered up in lobster butter right about now.
Its Irish roots date back to the 17th century because it welcomed Irish Catholic indentured servants who had been spurned by neighboring islands.
Is it a saint something?
Nope.
Oh,
I know it translates to something having to do with a mountain, but that's about as far as I can take you.
Mountain
starts with an M. Montserrat is what it says.
Okay,
here.
Sure.
Montserrat. Mm-hmm. What did devout Mormon Nathaniel Baldwin invent in 1910 after he had difficulty hearing the sermons delivered in the sprawling Salt Lake Tabernacle?
Hearing aid?
Not a hearing aid, but
microphones?
Close. Microphones?
The big megaphone?
Megaphone?
No.
Front row seats?
American Sign Language.
No, he did not invent American Sign Language.
That was a good guess. Though.
He read lips?
No, actually, he invented the first air pressure headphones. So they would go from microphone to headphone. Yeah. Yep. So
that makes sense.
It's kind of interesting how the sound would be compressed.
The first earbuds.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Beats by Dre.
Which.
I'm sorry.
This is like the Beats by Dre. It's just so iconic. I mean, it's a really well done logo. I don't know if the artist would agree, but did you make it?
No, I wish. Okay. I'd be filthy rich or just plain filthy.
But the ripoffs of Beats by Dre, they're well known on the internet as one of the greatest knockoff brands ever. But they just have everything you would imagine, like Beat by Dr. May. I mean, they use basically the same font, and it's obviously not the same product. It's very, very funny. Meat. Oh, my gosh. Which two states, both of which call themselves commonwealths, were once a single state?
Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Virginia.
Virginia.
Kentucky.
Virginia and Kentucky were once the same state. Okay. That's right. They originally were a sprawling western county of Virginia altogether. Granted permission to apply for statehood by Virginia's General Assembly in 1789, that was Kentucky, the 15th state. Kind of a weird twist there. Virginia just kept breaking into bits throughout history, right? Then West Virginia.
Yeah. Well, they had to give that. Didn't they have to give that up? Wasn't that taken from them?
Well, I believe they went, you know, Mason-Dixon line style, right? Yeah. Wasn't that the way it worked?
Depends who you ask.
Because the West Virginians were the ones who were anti-slavery, and the Virginians were pro-slavery. And I feel like Ken Burns' documentary.
As we all look up at the map, trying to figure out who, where, and why.
And so. I can barely read it.
Need that fiddle music.
Well, I got a glare right about now over the Virginia, so I can't see it.
Exactly. Virginia. I did it for Jim since he's not here. What's the story behind the name Motel 6, the economy lodging chain that promises will keep the light on for you?
Tom Baudet.
It was originally
you could rent a room for $6.
$6 a night.
That's
six
right.
bucks a night. You
Is that
got
hourly
it.
Or minute rates? Oh.
We are ready to say goodbye while you think about your favorite flop house that charges $6 a night.
And the Magic Fingers.
Professor Chow.
See ya.
And Professor Maggio.
See ya.
Professor Manica.
Bye now.
And now these words from the University of Detroit Mercy.
Email your questions to atp@udmercy.edu. Or you may fax them to 313-993-1166. Attention, Ask the Professor.
Ask the Professor is transcribed to the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed technically by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.